Hello and welcome to the Pregnancy Wellness Podcast, hosted by me, Pip, a practicing midwife who is on a mission to provide you with real evidence-based information about pregnancy, birth, and the postpartum. Each episode, I'll be joined by special guests and leading experts to equip you with all the information you need for an empowered journey from conception right through to motherhood. So, with no further ado, let's make a cuppa and get started with today's episode. We often neglect our pelvic floor until we are pregnant or develop symptoms that lead us to focus on our pelvic floor health. But actually, we should all be considering our pelvic floor as an integral part of our wellness. I'm so excited that Claire Bourne, a specialist pelvic health physiotherapist, is joining us today to talk us through why so many of us are doing our pelvic floor exercises incorrectly, some common symptoms, and what we should be doing to improve our overall pelvic floor function. Claire has been a pelvic health physiotherapist for 7 years and now works for Six Physio in London. She's a mum of two, currently on maternity leave, and is really passionate about providing evidence-based information to mums during pregnancy and in the postpartum period. Claire mirrors the Pregnancy Wellness Podcast ethos in that no woman should feel alone or experience symptoms without support. So I'm immensely grateful that she is with us today, sharing her knowledge and expertise. So welcome, Claire, and thank you so much for joining me, because I know your family life at the moment is keeping you busy, it's safe to say.
That's definitely true. Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. It's lovely to be here. But yeah, not twiddling thumbs, but learning to juggle two kids, which is a new experience for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And in the current environment, yeah, with COVID, yeah, as well. Definitely makes it harder.
Yeah, it's definitely not how I imagined my maternity leave to be. But actually, a really good friend of mine's had a baby. We're now trying to like make sure that once a week we meet up, get a coffee, and feel like we're claiming back our maternity leave, because it should be one coffee at a time.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. There's no such thing as too much coffee in my life.
Never.
So when it comes to our pelvic floor, Claire, we kind of hear that term banded around so much, but what does it actually mean and what actually is it?
Yeah, and I think it's a great question, because I think I think some of the problem with pelvic floor health is that you hit pregnancy and maybe your midwife says, okay, now you need to do your pelvic floor. And you're kind of smiling and nodding and thinking, oh yeah, okay. But most of us just have no concept. And because it's not a muscle that you usually can sort of see the outward movement of, unless you kind of get a mirror and look at your vulva. But obviously if you go to the gym and you can see your own body moving, it gives you that visual feedback, where the pelvic floor is quite different. So essentially, where the pelvic floor is, it's exactly where it states it is. It's always, for us, the simplest muscle to understand, because it states where it is. It is in the floor of the pelvis. So the pelvis being made up of different bones, which is sort of like a circular structure. And at the bottom, the pelvic outlet is basically a hole, and the pelvic floor makes the floor of that, the base of that. It's made up of lots of different little muscles that all have great names, like bulbous spongiosis, ischiocavernosis, and all really funny names. But essentially, we just call it the pelvic floor. And together, they have such an important role. So obviously, a lot of the time we think about it as like, okay, it stops you wetting yourself on the trampoline or things like that. But really, if you think about motherhood, so it's keeping, you know, it essentially supports the weight of your baby and obviously all your organs and everything else during that time. It does keep us continent, but of wind and bowels, of poo and of wee, so really important. It provides sexual pleasure. It actually works with other muscles around the pelvis and the spine to give stability. So really, really important roles, but it can be just so on because we can't visualize it. And I always recommend to women, like, Google pelvic floor and actually see where it is. Because I think actually once you can visualize a muscle, it's very easy with a bicep, isn't it? Because you can actually see your bicep. If you can actually visualize where those muscles are, it can just make it so much easier. And it also makes you realize, okay, I know why those muscles are important during motherhood and, well, for life, because of where they are and what their role is.
Yeah, definitely. I love that. And it's such a shame we can't see them. It'd be so much easier if we could see them. If our sort of pelvises were transparent, it would be really helpful. Yeah. So we all know that we should be doing our pelvic floor exercises, Claire. And I think I probably speak for many women when I confess that I don't do them regularly, and I'm very aware that I don't do them enough.
Yeah.
So how should we actually be doing them? Because like you say, when you can't see the muscle, I know how to contract my bicep, but when you can't see them, it is more tricky.
Absolutely. So the best cue that we kind of currently understand from research is that most women find, if you think about holding in wind, so focusing on the contraction around the back passage, that can often bring the best contraction of the pelvic floor. Now, obviously, not everyone fits that model, but we often start with that advice because ultimately that's what most women find. It should be helpful. And a lot of the musculature actually sits around the back passage. So a lot of the cues used to be to think about stopping a wee or stop doing a wee on the toilet. Now we've moved away from that because actually if we do it on the toilet when we're doing a wee and we kind of stop the flow constantly, it can actually lead to the bladder not emptying properly, which could then lead to like urine infections. So it's a lovely test. And actually, if you're not sure one, how to do your pelvic floor, what it should feel like, or if yours is doing its job, you can always try and stop a wee mid-flow. However, don't routinely do your pelvic floor there, as probably used to be advised in, I'd say, sort of mother's generations and grandmother's generations. What we're recommending at the minute is, think about holding wind and letting go. Now, obviously, that sounds pretty simple, but actually, unless you can really get in tune with that, it can still be quite challenging. And a lot of things that we would often do is sort of use our bottom muscles, use our tummy muscles, use our leg muscles, because I think the thing is, we think it should be this massive contraction. Because again, if you think about like an arm, you're like, oh yeah, that feels like a really big movement. I can generate loads of power with it. And that's what we're kind of aiming for. But often with the pelvic floor, less is more. So just actually, when women come to me in clinic and I'm like, no, you're doing it. They're like, that's it. I'm like, yeah, that's it. That's all you've got to do. Hold the wind and then let it go. And making sure that the let go is happening. Because actually sometimes we can be, and often we're just like, do your pelvic floor squeezes. And so women are like, right, I've just got to squeeze. And then we've kind of moved away from actually remembering that muscles, in order to be healthy, also need to let go. So there's no point of just focusing on squeeze. You need to have a big squeeze and a bit like big let go. So that's how we should be doing them. It always sounds simple. We do think around 50% of women do them wrong, unfortunately, because of, for all the matters that we've sort of discussed. But I always say, you know, other things that you can do at home to sort of check is you can look for yourself. So I always say this doesn't always come naturally to us, but getting a mirror and having a look at your vulva. And what you should see is the back passage should basically tighten and move away from the mirror and lift a bit. And you also sort of see the vaginal entrance sort of closing as well. So have a little look at that. Some women might put their finger just inside the vagina and you should sort of feel a tightening, a lift of the pelvic floor happening. So those are options that you can try at home. Obviously, if you're really, really struggling and you're symptomatic, that is where a pelvic floor physio does come in, because we obviously can check it for you. That's kind of how we recommend it at home.
Amazing. And I suppose, is it sort of similar to that if we're working another muscle, we might do kind of a certain amount of repetitions? Is that kind of the same kind of setup with our pelvic floor?
Absolutely. And it just depends kind of why we're doing pelvic floor. So really, pelvic floor exercises, like any other form of exercise, should be something that is lifelong. It is always talked about in that kind of motherhood, pregnancy, postpartum period, but it shouldn't then just be dropped off. Lots of women are like, well, when can I stop them? I'm like, well, you don't really stop them. Because actually, in the same way, if you stop doing other body exercises, your muscles wouldn't be as strong. They wouldn't look the way you want them to. Obviously, the pelvic floor doesn't have an aesthetic goal. So they kind of, sometimes it doesn't feel as appealing to do them. But obviously, there's lots of other things that it does. So if we're not symptomatic of, so in the pregnancy and postpartum period, what we generally recommend from what we kind of currently understand, or if you're sort of symptomatic at any other point in your life of pelvic floor dysfunction, so prolapse, incontinence, are the general things that we'll talk about as women. Then we recommend that you're doing two different types of pelvic floor, which sort of complicate it a bit, I guess. So one we call them quick. It's not actually about speed, but it's just the fact that you're not holding the contraction. So you're thinking hold wind, fully let go, take a really lovely deep breath in, and then you'd repeat that, hold wind, and then let go. So no holds, and you'll do 10. Then you do the hold wind, so the same contraction, but you're just aiming to try and hold it for like 10 seconds. And again, the key thing there that is that you breathe in and out. So you're holding the contraction whilst you breathe in and out. And the reason for that is because the diaphragm and the pelvic floor have a really close relationship. So they're like opposing muscles, and in the body, muscles work together in like a little team. And that's the same with the kind of the diaphragm and the pelvic floor. So as the diaphragm goes down, so does the pelvic floor, and it sort of works like that. Julie Weeb, who's a physio who's done a lot of work, calls it like a bit of a piston. So it kind of goes up and down together. So what we want to be able to do is hold the pelvic floor against the breath, moving up and down, and then you let go after 10 seconds. Now, if you can't do 10 seconds initially, which I'd say is really quite difficult, don't panic.
I'm trying now. It's hard.
Oh, yeah. It's hard. Exactly. I'm still working up to 10 seconds postnatally because I'm like, oh, gosh, this feels like eternity. But yeah, you're aiming for 10 seconds and then doing 10 of those in a row. And then you're going to do that 3 times a day. So 10 quick, 10 long, 3 times a day. Which sounds like quite a lot. And I'll be honest, I'm really struggling to fit that in and just remembering to do it. And the other thing that's key to talk about is the position that you do them in. So if you're starting out on your pelvic floor journey and you've never done them before, we'd often advise try them in side lying in bed or anywhere really, because it's the easiest and you'll find that you can engage them the best. Then you kind of move into more upright positions like sitting. And that's lovely when you're postnatal to do it with feeding, because if you associate it with something you're doing for the baby, it's far more likely to happen in your day. And then what we want to get used to doing all of them in standing. Because, and this is often a bit that I think we miss out when it comes to pelvic floor work or rehabilitation. Most of us are not symptomatic when we're lying down or sitting down with pelvic floor symptoms of incontinence or prolapse. Most of the time it's when we're upright, when we're active, when we've been lifting the kids, when we've been going for a run, all those sort of things. Now, if we're not training our pelvic floor for those things, we can't expect them to meet the demands. So that's what I'd say is if you're doing pelvic floor and you're either thinking they're not getting me better or this is just getting a bit easy, move into standing and try and do as many as possible in standing. Now, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, well, I'm not symptomatic and I'm actually not in that initial pregnancy postpartum period, if you're thinking about you just want to do a bit of a maintenance thing, you'd obviously train slightly differently and you're just thinking about doing a few of each every day. But yeah, it depends kind of on like where you are in your journey. But I'd say probably most of us don't do what we're recommended to do ever. And actually, that's completely natural and it can be really hard to fit it in the same way that as during motherhood and pregnancy, fitting in any workout is really quite difficult. I'm a big fan of seeing that rehabilitation phase of actually moving pelvic floor into training as well. And that's where like loads of pre and postnatal trainers are amazing at kind of cueing the pelvic floor through movement. Because actually, again, we need that pelvic floor to respond to what we're doing. And we're kind of moving away now from the kind of fear that movement is bad for the pelvic floor and impact is bad for the pelvic floor. And actually, it's not bad for it, but it needs to be able to meet those demands. So things like running, jumping, all that sort of stuff. As long as the pelvic floor can meet that demand, or we need to encourage it to meet the demands. And that's where I guess my job comes in to help when they get to that place. Long answer to...
No, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. So when we're doing these 10 quick ones and then 10 yeah. where we hold all kind of quick and that we're not holding,
yeah.
Is that kind of to train the kind of two different types of muscle fibre? Is that the purpose of that yeah. movement?
Absolutely. So yeah, so in every, all our kind of muscles in the body, we have... fast twitch and slow twitch. So fast twitch being those kind of quick sprinting fibers that kind of kick in if we cough, sneeze and laugh. And then your slow twitch fibers that kind of work all the time. They're kind of like more marathon running fibers and they kind of work on that sort of holding picture of like supporting baby, holding pelvic organs, that sort of thing. And we need both of them to work. And it can just be that, yeah, and some of us, our muscles aren't quick enough to respond and things like that. So it's kind of how we train them. But that's why we want to, yeah, spot on, get that balance of both.
Amazing. That's really useful to know. And then for women that are much better than myself at doing their pelvic floor exercises, is there kind of too much of a good thing? Can we overdo our pelvic floors?
Yeah, so we can. Some of us will have a kind of a tighter pelvic floor potentially. And that can happen for lots of reasons. It's not just if you've been doing too many or you've been working too hard. Essentially, if we are only focused on that squeeze, as I mentioned, ultimately over time, we're not getting that let go. So when it comes to any muscle in the body, you want strength, but you also want it to be flexible. So you want it to have a nice kind of range of movement in its kind of letting go as well. So women throughout life, for whatever reason, we might sit in one camp more than the other. And it's women who have a tight pelvic floor might have symptoms of, say, always had sex might have been always quite painful, or using a tampon was either impossible or painful, or smear tests were just not possible or really, really painful. And so that may be something that you've just sort of thought, why am I like that? Or you may never have talked to anyone about that. That's not the only reason, but it could be an indication that your pelvic floor is on the tighter side. And so with someone, if someone came to clinic with me, or what I would advise is actually, rather than focusing on the squeezing initially, we actually want to do something that we would enable down training, which would be a lot of like breath work, learning to let the pelvic floor go, sometimes doing kind of release work of the pelvic floor. So thinking about, like, if you had really tight neck muscles, you might go for like a massage, you might massage those muscles. You can actually do that with the pelvic floor as well, which sounds a bit like bonkers at times, but really important to kind of help those pelvic floor let go as well. And then we'd work on then building in that squeeze, but making sure we're maintaining that let go as well. So I think the key message always, and actually, if I'm honest, I feel like, and this is not research based, this is just very like clinical, professional, and even talking with my colleagues, I think actually a lot of us can actually sit on that tighter spectrum more than we think. And actually the pelvic floor is highly responsive to emotional stress as well. And actually during very stressful times, and I know from connecting with women at the minute, you know, they're saying a lot of my pelvic floor symptoms are actually been coming back. Is that because they've not had as much time to do their pelvic floors, or is actually we're just all quite stressed, we're not breathing particularly well, pelvic floors are actually getting a bit tighter, and actually if we just let everything go, we can actually then work towards our symptoms again. So yeah, I think before we always used to focus on it's everyone's weak. If you're symptomatic, you're weak, but actually it's not true. And you can have incontinence and have a tight pelvic floor. And that's where getting that individualized help, that's why it doesn't work for us just to give women a leaflet about pelvic floor and say, crack on. Because actually, just because you have incontinence doesn't mean that your pelvic floor is weak, or whether it's weak, or it doesn't mean that it's like long and weak, you know, it could be like quite tight, but not doing its job. So that's where you need that individualized assessment. And that's why it's in the NICE guidelines, obviously, what we follow as clinicians, isn't it, for clinical practice.
Yeah.
We know that for incontinence and prolapse, you know, the recommendation now is if women have those symptoms, they should be referred to a pelvic health physiotherapist. Now, is that happening widely? Not yet. And that's partly for many reasons. That's, you know, probably some always down to money, but also there aren't enough pelvic health physios probably around to necessarily meet that demand. But that's why it's in the guidelines, because the research is supportive of that individualized help that so many women do need.
Amazing. Yeah. And your roles as pelvic health and specialist women physiotherapists is just amazing. And I think we're probably only scratching the surface with appreciating the kind of individualized work that you do, because like you say, you can't assess what someone's individual issue is and then start a treatment pathway that's appropriate if you haven't had that physical assessment.
Completely. And I think that's what a lot of women I work with do say, you know, as well, like actually you can go through whole of pregnancy and no one even checks your pelvic floor, no one checks your vulva, no one even looks, and then you're in birth and then suddenly everyone's looking and you're like, but actually if maybe you'd understood more about your body in that run up to birth, you know, obviously we don't have a study that supports that 100%. Like if everyone had seen a pelvic health physio, what input would that have on that birth? And, you know, preparing with perineal massage, I mean, that's a study that would be fascinating to do actually. If we equipped women more in pregnancy, would that make a difference to their birth? Who knows? But I think empowerment and knowledge and understanding your body is just so key. I mean, at all points in life, but especially for mums, I think, during that time.
Yeah, definitely. I totally echo that, Claire, because like you say, there is no evidence and it would be an amazing study. And if anyone thinks of doing one, I'd love to be involved because I think that power of kind of prenatal education and understanding about our body, we do women such a huge injustice by not kind of getting that across. And your pelvic floor and that relaxation that we talked about is essential for your baby to be born. You know, if you can't relax that pelvic floor, your baby can't come out. It needs to be able to come through it.
And like, you know, studies show that pelvic floor it lengthens by 3 times for that baby to come out. I mean, that's a huge amount of lengthening.
It's amazing.
It is amazing what it has to do. And it's just a whole fascinating thing. But I think even just women understanding why pelvic floor is important, because I think we're not very good at that part of the education. We're very good at saying pelvic floor is important, But understanding the whole role of the pelvic floor within that whole kind of perinatal period is just so key. And it can just feel like another thing on the list. And it's quite boring. Like, I find them boring. I find it hard to remind myself to do them. But I think once you really fully hold as to why, like I used to teach antenatal classes and women would be like, oh, here we go, pelvic floor chat. But afterwards they're like, oh, thank you, I really understand it now. And I was like, yeah, you know, actually once we understand something generally, it makes it much more approachable and manageable. But yeah, I think, you know, antenatal education is fascinating, isn't it? And actually everyone's antenatal education is different and kind of how they're accessing that. But I also think the role of a pelvic health physio, as you say, is just being understood more. And I think that's partly has been a responsibility on our part to be like, hello, we exist. obviously having more research to back up what we do, because that's essential when it comes to doing anything clinical guidelines wise. And then I think, yeah, I mean, I think social media has been brilliant for that. And I know when I started using social media like a few years ago, there weren't loads, especially within the UK, there weren't loads of pelvic health physios kind of using social media. And I always used to be a bit frustrated being like, oh, we just don't have a voice because actually we're not doing it. And that's kind of part of the reason I've decided to kind of do social media is like, we need to be out there saying we exist. Because then women will understand, other clinicians will understand. You know, most GPs don't even know we exist, you know, which is fascinating. But ultimately, no wonder, because actually it hasn't been such a big thing within physiotherapy. You know, it's a massively growing area and we're understanding more and more. We now treat men, we now treat children, you know, it's vastly growing more than just like, okay, it's important for that perinatal period. It's important for life. And I think so much is changing and I'm really excited because I think by the time like, my kids are having babies, I think the outlook will be so different. And hopefully
there's hope. Keep chatting about it. You just mentioned there, Claire, about men's pelvic floor, and I know this is probably our audience is largely female based, but does the kind of technique, is that the same for men as for women?
Essentially, yeah, the pelvic floor is very similar, obviously with some clear differences. Yeah. But essentially, yes, it's very similar. Holding wind, the studies around kind of what's the best cue for men is sometimes slightly different. Like one study showed that actually thinking, and this is obviously a concept as a woman I don't really understand, but think about actually like trying to shorten the penis or so you're kind of drawing it in can work for some men better. But again, when I work with men, they're all different. And a lot of men can actually have problems with a tighter pelvic floor as well. I actually see a lot of men with sort of pelvic pain, testicular pain, erectile function disorders as well. So I think the thing is women, we have a role in supporting men in that because we think we're bad at getting help for our pelvic health. Men, it's even harder. And the knowledge of men's health support is even worse. So we have a lot more work to do in that area. But yeah, I think as women, if we can understand more about how we can support men in that field, then even better.
Definitely. So maybe we should all be doing our pelvic floors at home in couples.
Exactly. Men, they're always like, oh, I get off. I'm like, you never get off. No. We all have teamwork.
That's it. That's going to be everyone's homework.
Yeah.
Now, I guess when we talk about our pelvic floor, maybe rather than referring to it as kind of weak or tight, we should think of it as like dysfunctional so that we're kind of covering both of those groups. So what kind of signs might there be that our pelvic floor is either too weak, too tight, or just dysfunctional for us?
So pelvic floor dysfunction is that big umbrella term for lots of things. So what might we experience? We may experience urinary incontinence, and that might be if we cough, sneeze and laugh, or if we really need a wee and we can't make it to the bathroom on time. It also might be that you're not leaking urine, but you might just be more urgent or need to go more frequently. So you may not be leaking, but that's still a symptom. And it's not just your pelvic floor, obviously, it's relationship with bladder and bowel and other things that are going on. But pelvic floor would obviously have a role within that. Prolapse being the one that we often fear a lot. So prolapse being the kind of descent of any of the pelvic organs. So that being bladder, bowel, womb, so cervix with that, small bowel, urethra, which is the tube that brings the wee out of the bladder. So any of those things can kind of drop into the vagina. At any point in life, obviously one big risk factor being childbirth and pregnancy. So you might have symptoms of heaviness or a dragging, or sometimes women express it like you've tried to put a tampon in, but it just doesn't sit high enough. That sort of rubbing sensation that women might experience with that can sometimes be the case. But women can have a prolapse and no symptoms as well. So it's important to say not everyone is symptomatic of that. You could be incontinent of feces, so poo, or you might be more urgent for a poo. I know lots of women suffer with that after baby, or wind incontinence. So again, I had a baby and you're now like, I just can't hold wind in the way I used to. And then we move to that sort of pain picture. So as you say, sort of sexual pain, or, you know, smears and tampon use that we've talked about, or it can also just be generalized pelvic pain as well. So so vulvodynia as well. So that's kind of just pain of the vulval area. So yeah, it's vast. And also we'll treat a lot of women who have sort of vulval skin conditions, which often doesn't get any kind of talk about. So if you have vulval eczema, so some women who have eczema elsewhere on their body, because the skin of the vulva is extension of the rest of our skin, you know, it's not like a separate bit. You can get eczema of the vulva tissues, and that can again be linked with painful sex as well. But often I'd find that's really missed. Again, you can get vulval psoriasis. There's lots of other vulval skin conditions as well. So when it comes to pelvic health, and pelvic floor dysfunction, it is vast. And actually, also, it's important to remember that what's going on at your tummy also has a relationship at your pelvic floor as well. So, really, when we're called pelvic health physios, you often think we're just focusing on the pelvic floor. But I think actually we're moving further away from the pelvic floor and thinking what else is going on to influence the pelvic floor, because the body is a team. Obviously the pelvic floor being a key part of that. But so many things that you could be experiencing that would come under that kind of umbrella term.
And I guess where our bodies are so kind of interconnected, a weakness in, for example, our core muscles can then have that knock-on effect to our pelvic floor and vice versa, can't it? So it makes sense that actually you're encompassing all of these different structures. And
absolutely. You can't just look at one muscle in the body and treat it in isolation. We have to look at it, with the other muscles in different positions, you know, working out why you're symptomatic, when you're symptomatic and stuff like that. And that's, again, as I say, that's why it's more than a leaflet, because all of those things, it's just far more complicated. And but so treatable as well, which is, I think, often not understood and not widely known as well.
Yeah, that's so true, because I think, Claire, there's so many women out there that will find that when they jump on a trampoline or they cough, they leak urine, and they just think that that's normal and inevitable because of their life. But actually, I'm right in thinking that's not.
No, absolutely. We shouldn't be. You know, if we're having any signs and symptoms, that is a sign that our body is not working in the same way. And I think if you had, I would say this, you know, if you went for a run and you had pain in your knee, would you carry on without any help? Maybe some of us would, but I think a lot of us, because when it's like pain, you're forced not to do it. Whereas because to some extent you can put a pad in and you can crack on, we just use that as like a plaster and we just think, okay, well, that will resolve that issue for me for now. Obviously I'm leaking still, but you know, I'm not going to have wet trousers, so fine. No one will really know. But actually it's still your body communicating with you. It's just a different form of communication. But we shouldn't be leaking urine. In fact, at any point in life, that should not be happening. That is a sign the pelvic floor is not meeting the demands that we are putting on it. And we need to support it to be able to do that. I think a lot of the problem is because there's been this sort of narrative of like, well, if you're leaking, then we just need to stop doing those things. Or, you know, impact is just, you know, I think a lot of women are afraid that if they go to seek help, they're just going to be told not to run anymore. And they're going to be told they just can't do those things anymore. And for a lot of us, like running, exercise is such an important part of who we are, our identity, our mental health, that actually the fear of that being taken away from us naturally, well, you don't want that. So why would you go and, you know, access that then when someone might tell. And I think as physios, we can sometimes be seen as the fun police who are just going to be like, stop all that stuff, because that's just really bad for you. As actually what we're really trying to say now is like, no, we want you to have even more fun doing the things you want to do. We want you to enjoy it even more and not be symptomatic. And I hope that's kind of message will keep getting out there. Though unfortunately that's going to take time, you know, because ultimately when I think, again, Dr. Google, what a nightmare. You know, you put in your symptoms and you're convinced that you're going to be having surgery tomorrow. And I think it's important to also touch on, the challenge and the awful experiences that women have had with the mesh surgery. And was it 2 weeks ago, the Cumberledge report came out. I feel like weeks are merging in my life, so I'm not sure when. A couple of weeks ago, the report came out and expressing the real horrendous things that women have had through, not everyone though, but some women have had through this kind of having mesh surgery for prolapse or for stress incontinence. And so you're then Googling thinking, oh gosh, I'm going to have a surgery that's potentially going to debilitate me for life. And again, a really key part of that has come out is that the role of the pelvic health physio for the women who've had the surgery and are living with pelvic pain, but also this push towards, we have got to change this for the next generation. And some of the summaries of that report were like, you know, we really need to consider taking on the French role of postnatal care, which is that every woman gets like 10 sessions. I think it's 10 sessions with a pelvic health physio to look at their pelvic floor health and their just general well-being. We need to consider as the NHS to take that on, because actually we need to be proactive. It's great to think, okay, fine, 30, 40 years, women hit menopause and you can do a surgery. But actually, if we just looked after women when they had those babies, what change would that have? Again, research, we need to do more. But I think we can understand the prevention nature of this. And I think it's really important that we do step up and make a change now. Because we need to make a difference.
Yeah, I mean, and hopefully, Claire, that is a potential positive that comes out of the awful stuff with the mesh for women. Because if we had that support for postnatal women, because I know it's absolutely dismal, the pelvic support that they get afterwards. So having that as a package of care would be absolutely amazing.
Oh, I know.
And I'd love for us to be able to offer that.
I know. Yeah. I'd absolutely love it. And I think, you know, the main thing and the message to women is that change, I think, will come. And there are lots of things happening behind the scenes with NHS England to bring about these changes. But again, with all of these things, there's so many parts of the picture. And actually, at the minute, we don't have enough pelvic health physios to meet all the births that are happening. So, you know, any physios out there, we need more pelvic health physios. And I think it's often seen as like not a particularly appealing area. You know, I think we all came out of uni thinking that we were going to be massaging rugby players. And obviously pelvic health ain't that, you know.
Yeah.
I was that person. I ended up in pelvic floor. It just happened to be my first job and I thought, oh no, like the job that no one wants to do. And I've absolutely fallen in love with it. It's the most amazing area, I think, of physiotherapy. Obviously I'm biased, but you know, I think we need to inspire this next generation to come up, because we have a lot of women to care for.
Yeah, definitely. And it's so, so important and so valuable to women for the rest of their lives. It's amazing. So just heading back to kind of childbirth and pelvic health. So perineal tearing, we know it affects sort of 85 to 90% of women who have a vaginal birth.
A lot.
Does that kind of impact your pelvic floor health more so than perhaps someone that didn't have any tearing?
So yes, essentially. So when it comes to tearing, there's four grades, as you will know very well. but, you know, the first involving generally the skin around the vulval area. Now, that could be one of your, you know, labia. That could be around towards the clitoris. That could just be part of the perineal skin, but it's the skin. Some will get stitched. Most will be left to kind of heal themselves. It depends on where it is and how big it is and all that sort of stuff. But when we move on to the second degree tear onwards, so second degree tear is when the pelvic floor muscles start to be involved. So they need suturing to essentially, if there was a tear in a muscle, you bring it back together to help it to heal. When we come to third and fourth degree tears, that involves the anus as well, which is obviously feels terrifying, understandably, but it is a small percentage. So first time mums is about 6%. Subsequent births, we think it's around 2 to 3%. Not that makes anyone feel better. If you're in that 6%, you still feel like, well, like I'm still in the freaking 6%, so thanks for that, but it's not many, but I'm still one of them. Anytime, and if you think again, it's sometimes helpful to step away from the pelvic floor and think about another muscle group. You know, I'd say to him, if that was your quad in your leg, so your quadricep muscle at the front of your leg, if you tore that muscle, what would be your approach? You would need it to heal. We then need to strengthen it and rehabilitate it before we go back to what we were doing before. And I think that is the big pit of the message that gets. We just say, okay, it's going to take about 6 weeks to heal and then you're healed. But we don't think about actually whenever you have pain, swelling, restrictions in a muscle, it massively impacts their strength. And that needs rehabilitation. And that's unfortunately, I guess, the biggest chunk of the picture that I think we're missing at the minute. And I think, again, we can tell women to do their pelvic floor exercises. Brilliant. So that's a very key starting point. But actually, when you've got scarring within a muscle, actually that can cause restriction. And So sometimes what you'll have with the pelvic floor is that one side is very free and happy to move, but the other side, if there's quite an extensive amount of scar tissue, it's just struggling to move. And actually, again, if you, so women who may have done perineal massage before pregnancy, actually, if you massage that tissue yourself, that can actually help to kind of release some of that tension and allow the pelvic floor to work. And I think that's a big part of my role with women who come to me, like, I've been doing pelvic floor for 6 months, I'm still struggling, I'm still leaking, I'm still, etc. And often when we actually release and let go some of that area of tension and sort of scarring, it actually again really helps their symptoms. So yeah, it will absolutely have an impact on your pelvic floor health. And I think the other key message is that even if you don't have tears, it's still important, because I know lots of women say, you know, they might message me, I've only had a first degree tear, or I've had no tearing, you know, do I still need to do it? Yes, because again, when the baby comes out, if it's lengthening by 3 times, that's an awful amount of stretch. And that pelvic floor, pregnancy really impacts the pelvic floor the most, because that's like 9-10 months of extra weight on it. So it's always important, but obviously if you've had tearing, even more important. But I think with first degree tears, and I've been thinking about this more, you know, actually any time there's a tear, even if it's in the skin, not the muscle, skin being on top of a muscle, you know, if that's torn, there's going to be, and you've stitched that back, there's going to be some scar tissue around that's connected to the muscle. It does still has an impact. So it's easy to think like, oh, well, it doesn't really affect me because my muscles haven't been torn. Brilliant. But still has an impact for sure.
I love that tip of the massaging, Claire. I'm definitely going to pass it on, because I've not heard of that before, but it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and we never tell women about it.
No, and I'm guilty. Like, I've never suggested that to any postnatal women, but I definitely will. And I think that kind of links into us just getting more familiar with our own bodies.
Totally.
And not being scared to look at the perineum during the healing process. And then doing that massage, that's amazing. I love that. I'll definitely, definitely take that away.
And brilliant. Yeah.
Improve my practice. That's amazing. So then I suppose you've kind of answered one of my questions, that was women who've had a cesarean section. So presumably they've been through that pregnancy. They may or may not have gone through that labor, but the pelvic floor for them is still really important, because it'll have been weakened through their pregnancy journey.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing with cesarean, again, you've got a new scar in the body, which obviously sits very low down just above the pubic bone. Now, again, we've talked a little about relationship with muscles and connective tissue. You know, the pelvic floor has a relationship with that connective tissue. It's just above it. And actually, sometimes women who've had cesarean sections may then go on to experience some actual tightness within the pelvic floor. And then they might find sex painful. And they're like, why is sex painful? Because the baby didn't come out of there and I've had no tearing down there, and that can just be because of dryness if you're breastfeeding and hormonal changes, but it can actually be related to the scar. And so C-section scar massage is also really important, and something I'm super passionate about, and I've shared quite a lot about on social media and videos of me doing it on people's tummy, because again, you don't need to go and see a physio to do this stuff. You can do this stuff at home, but again, we're not educating women with it. So yeah, absolutely, find a video, try and do it yourself, C-section scar massage is also really, really important.
Amazing. And I've seen some of your section massage videos and they are amazing. And Claire's social media will be linked on the bio of this podcast, so definitely go and check that out. Definitely. And then I suppose the other thing, Claire, that's maybe a misconception, or maybe there's truth in it, but as we age as women, is it kind of inevitable that our pelvic floor gets more dysfunctional and we have to start putting up with some of these symptoms? Is that just an inevitable part of aging? Can we prevent it?
We can absolutely prevent it. And I think prevention is definitely better than cure. And another thing that came out of that Cumberledge report was that we need to work on prevention. It is much better than cure. So I think definitely, obviously, as we age and as women, we hit menopause, we have a hormonal shift, so that estrogen drops off. That has a huge impact on our tissues, multiple tissues. So our bone density, our muscle strength and our muscle mass. And you know, we all know those things that menopausal women talk about, you know, the sagging of the skin and just generally finding it harder to lose weight and you know, all those, and our muscles just not being as strong, all those sort of things change. So yes, there are inevitable things that are happening, but that doesn't mean that we therefore have to just accept things. And actually, again, if we looked after ourselves through our 30s, 40s, 50s into the menopause period, actually what a difference we'd have hitting that time. Yes, because there's hormonal shifts that affect all of our muscles, that will have an impact on our pelvic floor. And sometimes for women, they may have been absolutely fine after having babies. They've gone through their baby, childbearing years, and they hit menopause and suddenly they have symptoms. Now, often menopause gets all the bad rap, but actually probably some of those things have been grumbling away for the years, but your pelvic floor and the strength and the hormonal factors have just been helping you not be symptomatic. And then when we start taking those things away, you become symptomatic of prolapse or incontinence. So yeah, absolutely. Be proactive, do your pelvic floor throughout. And then, you know, it sets you really well up for the menopause when those inevitable things do happen. But actually, if we look after ourselves before that point, it sort of loosens the blow of those changes.
I love that. So we're kind of like building the foundations now, aren't we, for that kind of future health. It's really important.
Yeah, because menopause is such a hard time, isn't it? I mean, it gets such a bad rap, and for good reason. It's really, really, really horrible and difficult experiences for a lot of women. But again, if we were just supporting women, I think often we go into blinkers and we're like, we'll just deal with that then. Let's not think about it. It's not now. But actually, if we just think, okay, so it is going to happen, how can I enter that time as well as possible? And I think bone density is a key thing for us to talk about. And it is something that concerns me, because I think when we get those postnatal mums who are avoiding all impact, all strength training, weightlifting because of their pelvic floor symptoms, we are naturally having an impact on bone health, because we know for bone health and bone density, we need strength training, we need weightlifting, we need impact. And so I do worry that if we're stopping women doing that, and I did a talk recently and I asked the audience, I was like, you know, what exercise are you doing? And most of them were doing Pilates. I love Pilates, so I'm not anti it. Swimming, nothing kind of loading and weight bearing. And a lot of them was because they're afraid of their pelvic floor health and their symptoms. And I think, crikey, we really need to deal with that as well. Because actually, again, you know, when it comes to osteoporosis or osteopenia in that menopausal time, are we actually seeing more of that because we're not helping women get back to impact exercise? Again, I don't know. I have nothing to prove that, but I think we can all kind of think with common sense that is probably happening.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's what I think, that investment in that postnatal period is just so multifactorial, and we're actually supporting women with so many things that we're spending money on with for women in menopause. And actually, if we just thought it to, you know, looked after them a bit more, maybe we'll make those changes.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Claire, actually. And if someone is, I don't know, they're a runner or they're a weightlifter, something that's kind of weight-bearing, if they're having symptoms currently doing those movements, would your advice be to carry on and do their pelvic floor alongside, or to pause while they build those kind of foundations?
Yeah, so it's really tricky, but the general advice would be, like, if what you're doing is causing you symptoms, we want to take a pause, not say stop it completely. So let's talk about running, for example. If you find that the first 25 minutes of your run, you're asymptomatic, and it's only when you hit, you're like, oh, by the end of my run, I then leak. Okay, that's a sign that maybe your pelvic floor is just can only handle with that much stress. Or you find that you only leak when going downhill rather than uphill, and things like that, which sometimes women can experience. We need to just modify those factors of it. So we wouldn't say stop all running, but we'd say let's work within your symptom-free window. And then as we're doing your pelvic floor rehabilitation, we keep pushing you on, so that you then become symptom-free and you're what's causing your symptoms. And again, with weights, you might just go for slightly lighter weights and build up, or, you know, maybe less reps, things like that. So this is where individual help is so essential. But yeah, I wouldn't say stop everything, but it's finding out where your symptoms lie whilst you're waiting maybe to receive that help. But yeah, don't give up everything if you don't need to. But obviously, if the first, you know, you're just running down your street and that causes you to leak again, or it might be that you need a run walk program to start with. And actually, because I think a lot of women, you know, they get to that 6 week mark and they're like, great, I can crack on again. But actually, we now think, and there were some brilliant guidelines written by some lovely friends of mine, so Gráinne Donnelly, Emma Brockwell, and Tom Goon as well, who's a kind of musculoskeletal physio. And they were looking at actually what is the worst thing my body gone through and what actually should it be able to kind of take. Really, we think running earliest is around 3 months. Most women probably closer to the 6 month point with good rehabilitation. And again, it's more than just pelvic floor strength. It's what else is going on around that whole pelvic area. So yeah, we think that actually, and then a run walk program being probably best for a lot of us anyway to build in that impact again. So I think sometimes it's just how we approach the impact and the running rather than it itself.
No, that's amazing. So I think people are really scared that when they start to speak up, that'll be it. It'll be like, you can't do all those things that you enjoy. But actually, your role is making sure you can do those things and you can enjoy them even more because you're not leaking and having these symptoms.
Exactly.
Now, Claire, I feel like we have to touch on these devices. And please enlighten me. Are they, some of them look terrifying. Some of them are really expensive. Are they kind of a marketing dream or do they have a kind of purpose? Do they work, I suppose?
Really important. So when we come to pelvic floor devices, again, you'll see them everywhere. They sit in generally two camps. So we have stimulation devices, which are basically a probe which goes with inside the vagina, and it works on stimulating the muscles. So it's sort of similar to those kind of ab trainers that you sometimes see sold on the TV that basically contract the muscles for you, and then suddenly you're going to have an impact, a six pack. I mean, brilliant, lovely.
if only they worked.
If only, exactly. I won't be signing up for one. But yeah, if you're basically similar. So you put the device in the vagina, and it contracts your pelvic floor for you. So that's stimulation devices. And then you have biofeedback devices, which are basically, they don't do the work for you, but they pick up what you are doing and give you a visual feedback. So that comes in different forms. Some it's like a little box that maybe has lights that go up and down. Some sync with your phone. There's lots of different things. Some have like vibration. And essentially the reason is, as we've talked about, you can't see the muscle yourself. It's sometimes hard to kind of engage with what it's doing, and it gives you that feedback. So that's what we call biofeedback. Now, essentially, they are not an essential part for every single woman. So don't go rushing out to buy one if you're suddenly like, oh no, I'm leaking, I must go and buy a device. And again, we come back to guidelines when it comes to any clinical practice. Both, they've got nice guidelines for incontinence and prolapse state that they should not be first line, but they should be assessed for an individual, whether it's appropriate. So again, what I often say, and I'm not against devices, they do have a role within pelvic floor health rehabilitation. And as physios, we do recommend them, we do use them. But often, if you look at the price for a lot of them, they would be the same price as seeing a pelvic health physio privately. But for some reason, sometimes it feels easier to invest in that gadget rather than go and see an individual. So I always say to women, you know, if you're thinking about that, just weigh it up. Like, actually seeing an individual who's going to tell me what's the state of my pelvic floor would actually be far more beneficial to you than a device potentially. And then as a physio, we might say, you know, stimulation devices are really good for women who have like no pelvic floor contraction, nothing going on. So we want to get that muscle working again before we then, you know, wean you off that and get you doing it yourself, because that's the ultimate goal, is you doing it yourself without any device. The biofeedback devices do often have a role for women who maybe, as we say, they're doing it but they can't really feel it. Motivation, adherence to doing the exercises. So sometimes women are like, you know what, I just keep forgetting. If I have a device I can put in and I have that kind of protected time, a bit like a personal training session or, you know, your own workout session, you're more likely to do it. Great. You know, some women, that is just the role. Or some women just who are like, I cannot access pelvic health physio for whatever reason, whether it's location, affordability, whatever that might be, they think actually getting a device that does give me some feedback is really helpful for me. So there are definitely reasons why women would use them, but we don't all need to go out rush and buy one straight away. We just need to consider the role with that for an individual.
Amazing. That's really good advice, because like you say, I do think that sometimes women just think that's what I need, or I've had a baby, I must get a device. But actually having that knowledge and that underpinning understanding can be much more valuable, especially in the long run. So Claire, for pelvic health physiotherapists, the women who feel that actually this would be a really beneficial route for them, are you just generally private or are there NHS based pelvic health physios as well?
Yeah, no, there's an extensive network on the NHS. So at the minute, how it sits is obviously if you're symptomatic of, and that, so in pregnancy, think about kind of why we're talking about this on this podcast, pregnancy being maybe you've got pelvic girdle pain, back pain, hand and wrist pain, neck pain, whatever that might be, that a pelvic health physio can help you with that. And you can access that generally via your midwife or GPs sometimes. Obviously a lot of women don't actually see their GP in pregnancy anymore, so often I say, you know, it'd be your midwife would be your first port of call. Or if you're having any leakage or symptoms of urinary incontinence, fecal incontinence or prolapse in pregnancy. And then when we think about postpartum, again, symptoms of any form of incontinence of urine or feces or wind, prolapse symptoms, pain, like when you've returned to sex, things like that, that is all accessible on the NHS when you're symptomatic. Now, as much as I say it's accessible, sometimes the journey to reaching that is quite challenging. And that's partly due to awareness of services, as I say, knowledge, understanding of guidelines, finances, funding pathways, it's different across the UK everywhere. And so sometimes if you say see your GP and you say I'm leaking urine, sometimes all that GP can do is refer you into gynecology as a, you know, to the medical side of things. And then you'd see a doctor who would then say, listen, the best port of call for you is physiotherapy. Some GPs are able to directly refer to physiotherapy, and other places you can actually self-refer into physiotherapy, sometimes into a class for like incontinence. And then if you're still having symptoms ongoing, then once you've had lots of education, then you'd go and see someone face-to-face. So it really depends on where you are. But the NHS, yes, there is extensive availability. Again, obviously in current climates, as we mentioned, during a pandemic, services are opening up face-to-face. A lot of it's gone to kind of telehealth, but it is available. But obviously depends on where you are. I think over into the rest of the year, they're all opening up more. And then yes, there is loads of women, pelvic health physios now working privately. And the best way to access that and find out who's in your local area is if you Google Squeezy app directory. So there is the Squeezy app that you can get on your phone, which reminds you, it's an NHS app, it's £2.99. It reminds you to do your pelvic floor, it sort of pings you reminders the whole time and then walks you through it. But there's a directory online, which basically most pelvic health private physios are now listed. Those NHS are also listed on there. So I often say to women, if you're struggling to access NHS route, you could look up your local NHS physio, and on the directory, it states often how the referral can happen as well. So I often say, you know, if you're struggling with your GP, maybe take that information with you and just have a discussion with them. Be like, listen, I've heard about pelvic health physio. This is what I understand is available in this area. Because, my husband's a GP. I know their day-to-day life, how many services they have to have the awareness of. I don't think they're going to be annoyed if actually you bring a bit of proactive information. And they may not be able to deal with it straight away, but then they might prompt them to think, okay, going to look into this. So that can be helpful if you look. But then on the directory, you can see all the private health physios in your area, and then you might link in with one that way. And sometimes it's just a one-off that you think, I can only afford a one-off. We totally understand that if that's something that you want to do, just to kind of get a check postnatally, see where you're at. And then the other big thing we also deal with is diastasis, or diastasis recti, separation of the abdominal muscles, is also a big part of kind of what we do. Again, access on the NHS is possible, can be a little bit more challenging, but is available.
Amazing. So for any women out there who have got symptoms, I think the kind of take home from us is that you don't need to suffer with them, and that your role is just invaluable. And so to use your voice and get out there and start seeing somebody.
Yeah.
Now, definitely. Claire, anyone that comes on, I always ask for some top tips.
Mm-hmm.
So just to throw it out there, what would be your kind of three top tips for any pregnant or postpartum mums, regardless of time frames, with regards to their pelvic floor health?
Yes, I think being proactive would always be my number one. You know, it's very easy when we're not symptomatic, even if that's you've been doing them and you were symptomatic, then you become asymptomatic. We then like, oh, I just stop it now. Just be proactive. Think about all the things that we've discussed and why they're beneficial for life, and just keep working on it. Keep working on your pelvic health would be my kind of first one. I think secondly, I'd say trust your instincts. And actually, if something doesn't feel right, the likelihood is that it isn't. And you may not understand why it doesn't feel right. And you kind of don't settle, even if someone tells you, because I hear a lot of like, well, you've had a baby, you know, that's kind of what happens now. And I'm like, no. We've got to move away from that narrative. It is wrong. And, you know, I'm not saying that pelvic health physio will cure every single woman, because it's just not true. That's why surgery is often sometimes needed. But if you haven't tried, you know, we need to try first to be kind of help that conservative management. So trust your instincts. You might have to fight to get the help, but do keep advocating for yourself. And yet never suffer in silence, because all these things, they're hard to talk about. It can be really embarrassing. And I get so many women say, I'm so embarrassed to say all this to you. You must never have heard this before. I'm like, I've heard everything. You know, don't worry. As medical professionals, as you know, we've seen everything, we've heard everything. Nothing shocks us. Just come, even if it's difficult, write it down, you know, whatever it might be, just come and just talk about those things. Because often once we talk about them, it becomes much more manageable. And then we can access that help, however is, I guess, most possible. Financially and practically as well.
Definitely.
And that's, you know, as a mum, it can be so thing, oh, well, I can't do anything because of the baby. And I've got to take, you know, I've treated so many women breastfeeding, baby. I've had the baby in the sling myself. You know, we want to make it accessible. So don't worry if you've got no childcare, no support. bring the baby, we'll make it work. Obviously, I know in current climate, it's so much more challenging always around, but there's a lot of virtual help as well at the minute. So if you're feeling like you don't feel confident enough to go out to a clinic, you know, do try and access it online, because just getting that journey and knowing you're not alone is such a big part of the recovery process. So yeah.
Amazing. Claire, thank you so much. Because like you said, it's amazing. Like you said, when you know you're not alone, is that actually so many women are affected by these symptoms, and it doesn't need to be that way. So please to all our women listening that have got symptoms, please get some help and support. Definitely. Because it is out there.
Yeah, massively so.
So thank you so much, Claire, for sharing all your knowledge and experience and helping to raise awareness, I suppose, on both pelvic floor health and also your role as a pelvic health physio and how important that is to us. And we shall all be doing our pelvic floor exercises this evening.
Yeah, exactly. We'll all remember today, if no other day.
Oh, thank you so much for your time, Claire, and for joining
me. My pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. I really hope that you enjoyed it. If you found it helpful, then please hit subscribe and leave a review. It really does make a huge difference to the number of women we can reach out to and empower. For daily free information, inspiration, or details on our bespoke antenatal education, head over to my Instagram page @midwife_pip. Thank you, and see you next time.